Hey guys, in today's video I want to talk about neuroplasticity, the way brains make structural changes. This topic is important because understanding neuroplasticity gives you a biological insight into things like memory consolidation, intelligence, cognitive training, education, and subliminal priming. Let's start with basics. The word neuroplasticity is actually a bundle of meanings wrapped into one word. In this video, I'll try to explain some of the different aspects of neuroplasticity and how these end up influencing one another. In general, there are two broad areas of neuroplasticity: structural plasticity, i.e., the changing of various brain structures, and functional plasticity, or changes in the brain that yield different brain activity patterns. These two types are inextricably linked with one another. Structural changes of different sizes yield various types of changes in activation. So let's talk about how functional changes happen in my synaptic fiber circuits video. I'm going to make structural plasticity the main topic of this video. I'll be starting with the largest expressions of neuroplasticity and make my way down to the smaller levels. The largest scale example is neuroplasticity, or those that can be detected using magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI. Using MRI, scientists physically measure the size of various parts of the person's brain, and they can use this tool to measure how different brain areas change in size over time. One method of doing so goes like this. Groups of subjects undergo some sort of training, like meditation training for 8 weeks, and their brains are measured with an MRI before and after the training. When compared to how non-trained control subject brains can change between the pre- and post-session MRI, the meditation trained subjects demonstrate significant changes to the size of various regions. So this means that to a certain degree, our brains are responsive to experiential changes. But saying that the brain is plastic in the face of environmental changes to a certain degree really underplays the amount to which our brains can change. Once you have an insight into neuroplasticity on the cellular level, you can just imagine how much restructuring is going on in order to cause a change on the scale of even the millimeter increase in the size of brain region. So what is it that's happening on the level of neurons that's causing these changes? Well, there's a lot of ways that neurons change. For starters, neurons can strengthen their mutual connection. This could take place by increasing the number of axons connecting to a specific cell, or increasing the number of synapses on a given axon. Neurons can also change the number of cells that they are connected to. As we get older, our brain undergoes many changes. One of the significant changes that happen is our neurons stop connecting to so many other neurons, and they strengthen the connections that remain. So large neuronal changes could happen for many individual neurons breaking off connections in one region and strengthening connections in another. For example, experienced ring instrument players have a larger left-hand representation on the motor cortex due to the amount of time they practice using their left hand to different notes. Rather than their left-hand representation merely being larger, it actually creeps into the area that would be normally reserved for face. In order for that to occur, a lot of changes have to happen. As we can extrapolate from what I've described above, certain neurons would get new connections and some are old ones. One possibility is that the left-hand neurons would be strongly connected to some of the nearby face neurons. These nearby face neurons would then cease firing with their previous neural population and begin firing with their new group, i.e. the left-hand neurons. This is one possibility of how certain representative areas may probe on others. So we've observed that neurons increase and decrease their connections to other neurons, and that these changes can have profound functional effects. But we haven't looked at probably the most significant source of neuroplasticity, synaptic plasticity. Synaptic plasticity happens whenever a neuron connects to a new neuron or removes its connection to a neuron like we talked about before. The important thing here is that synapses can remain in place, yet still conjure an enormous number of changes just by the different ways that they can their function. So, probably the most general way that synapses can change is that they can change the amount of signal that they are sending to their different cell. They do this by, one, changing the number of active sites on a synapse. Active sites are the spots on the synapse where the vesicles release their neurotransmitters into the synapse. But, two, synapses can change the number of neurotransmitters in the vesicle. The more neurotransmitters per vesicle, the longer the neurotransmitter received via neuron stays firing. Three, the synapses can change the number of neurotransmitter re-upping per subject. Neurotransmitters are taken out of the synaptic cleft by these reuptake receptors. Therefore, if you decrease the number of reuptake receptors, you increase the time with which the neurotransmitters have a chance to cause postsynaptic potential in the receiving neuron. And four, synapses can change the number of calcium. Calcium causes vesicles to fuse critical because on one axis on you see both excitatory and inhibitory synapses innervating the synapse. This means that one synapse, the excitatory synapse, is bringing the cell closer to firing, while the other inhibitory synapse is preventing it from firing. This brings up the question, why would you want to do that? Why does that make sense? It seems like a waste of energy. Well, I'm going to get into this topic a lot more in depth in my microstructure video, but basically, putting both excitatory and inhibitory synapses on the same neuron but in different spots allows for much greater control of the way that the receiving neuron is giving out its signal. This exact process happens in our visual cortex. The scientists have found out that it is both essential to our ability to process stimuli, and they found a couple of interesting ways to mess with the visual system in such a way to make us see things in an artificial way. So, we've covered neuroplasticity on three levels so far. 1, regional changes. 2, neuron level changes. And 3, synaptic changes. Now that you understand a bit about what kind of neuroplasticity exists in the brain, I want to briefly cover some other aspects of this topic. For starters, let's look at why the brain needs to be economical with where its neurons connect to one another. If a neuron added a lot of connections without removing anything, it would basically be a dead end vector. You might ask, why would that happen? It would make more sense that if a neuron connects to more neurons, then that's just more neurons that it'll cause fire. But this isn't actually true, because when a neuron creates an action potential, the membrane potential goes down the axon and declines at every branching. To a certain extent, this process of cutting down the number of neuronal connections and strengthening the ones that remain is one of the most significant neural changes that happen in the maturing human brain. When we're toddlers, our brain has many more synaptic connections than we do now. As we get older, many of these connections are removed, and the ones that remain are strengthened significantly. This is part of the fascinating way that our brain allows us to adapt to our surroundings. That's it for today's video.